Hey, welcome to my show, Feng Shui Your Way on UK Health Radio. I'm Janine Lo, your go-to Feng Shui consultant and Chinese astrologer. I've been helping people transform their lives for over 20 years, from private clients to big names and businesses, and I can't wait to share my tips and stories with you. On my show today, my guest is Guy Watts, who has been described by the Times as inspirational plantsman, gardener and pruner extraordinaire. He's an entrepreneur, a horticultural innovator, a Guinness World Record holder, and the owner of Architectural Plants, a 32-acre site of horticultural excellence in Pulborough, West Sussex, which isn't far from me. His journey spans award-winning gardens, extraordinary adventures at sea, major RHS achievements, and a deep commitment to training the next generation through AP Homegrown. We're going to explore his love of plants, the magic of transforming gardens, his passion for inspiring young people, and the stories behind some of his boldest projects, including planting giant trees by helicopter and rowing 4,500 miles across the Indian Ocean. I'm also going to ask him tips on feng shui garden. So settle in. This is so much to learn from a man who truly sees no boundaries. Welcome, Guy.
Thank you.
So let's start at the beginning. You first visited Architectural Plants when you were just 10 years old. What was that about? What was your first experience about it all?
Yeah, it's really interesting because it was a very special time in my life. And my mum and dad, although not part of their job, but they loved gardening, they're horticulturalists really, and they got me into gardening. So we had a little cottage down on the East Sussex coast called Rye. It's on the nature reserve, very, very exposed, very difficult place to garden. And so we went off to Architectural Plants to try and find some plants that would be suitable for that garden. And I instantly fell in love with it. Architectural Plants was all about, structural planting, mainly evergreens, really sort of beautiful spaces. And I just fell in love with the business from the day one, even as a 10-year-old.
Yeah, I remember being really young and going into my granddad's garden, and he had these runner beans, and I was more, well, no, not runner beans. He used just to pop them, yeah, peep. Yeah. And yeah. Am I a garden lover? No, I have a gardener. I can't understand. I can't, when you dig in the mud and you find a spider, right? I will find the one with the babies coming out of it, So it's not for me. So the earlier connection with AP, so was this a business already?
Yeah, so it was a small nursery run by the founder, Angus. He lived on, that's where his house was. So it was a very small nursery that, the idea was that they wanted to have plants and sell plants that you couldn't buy anywhere else. So things like exotic bananas and palm trees at the time, which is in 1990, you just couldn't buy them anywhere else. So the founder, Angus, just started growing plants of interest, and he would knock on people's doors and ask them if he could have some cuttings or seeds. And then it went from there. So, yeah, it was a business, but it was definitely a lot smaller than it is today. But it was very much sort of led by design. That was the core of it, was making beautiful spaces with plants and a selection of plants that had shape and form, architectural.
I see. So so after your early connection with, I'm going to call it AP now, which means
Thank
architectural
you.
Plants, because I don't want to have to keep saying architectural, like horticultural. Both those words I've been practicing at least 20 minutes before we came on the show. So you left, travelled, explored, and eventually returned in 2015. What drew you back into the nursery?
So I, at the time, was running a social enterprise, a registered charity called Streetscape in southeast London. And I got in touch again because Architectural Plants had moved to a new site, so AP had moved to a new site. And they asked if I could come and talk at their sort of opening event. And it was really great because they raised some money for my charity too. So it was brilliant. But during that day, I spoke to one of the owners and said, look, I've always wanted to come back here. At any point, where that might be an option, let me know. I'd love to come and run it. And 6 weeks later, I moved from London, and I travelled down. I got the job, and 6 weeks later, I was doing exactly that.
So you, I know this because I've done a lot of history into you. So in 2020, you bought the business.
Absolutely, yeah. So there were two owners, and I, Angus being the founder, and Robin, who both are sort of dear friends, really. They're amazing, both amazing in their own right. And so I had these two kind of owners that I was working alongside, but I always had this vision to own it. That was even from a very young age, I wanted to. So I suppose my dream came true. And so I started off by buying the business from Robin, and then we ran it a bit together, Angus and I, and then I finally bought him out during the COVID years. So yeah, it happened quite quickly, but it has been an intense 10 years. It's all encompassing. It's an amazing business, but it's hard work.
Yeah. So Guy and I met at a talk, a charity talk, and we all know that I'm into manifesting, and my book, which I am writing at the moment, Manifest Your Way to Abundance. And one of the things that we connected over was manifesting, and you were really interesting in it. And I think that you probably are the persona that can actually see it, because you, as a child, you fell in love with it, and then you've gone back and you've done it, and it's become your passion. So what are your thoughts on that, manifesting that?
So I think when we first met, there was just this instant connection around this subject, and I found it amazing listening to you, and I bought your book since, and there was just this, it kind of became true to me what I've been feeling a long time, which is, I suppose my way of explaining it would be that I have these very, very clear ideas of things that I want to achieve or do, and I really see them. I visualize them in a way that I can't really explain. And often when I'm that clear on something or have that clearer vision, much like, me now owning and running Architecture Plants, it just was very in my gut that that was going to happen. And I nothing would get in my way almost.
Yeah.
But it's quite a special feeling, because it's real. It's definitely happening to me. And there's various things across my life and chapters of my life where this has happened. And you just helped me to articulate it, I suppose, in a way that I didn't really understand before.
Yeah, so often people say to me, how is it when you manifest things, Janine, things happen? And I go, and they go, oh, you're a witch. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll go with that if you want. But actually, I see things. And then when they become quite obvious to me, I then start to feel it. And then I realise that I can get more involved in it. And then when I see the end product, that is when it happens. I'm very lucky, but I'm very definite about what I want. And that's where. But we've come away from what we were going to talk about. One of the things you mentioned just a moment ago was streetscape. Does that have anything to do with AP at all?
So I set up a charity in South East London where I was living at the time, Brixton, called Streetscape. The whole idea really was that we would take on 18 to 25 year olds. They were long-time employed. They may have come out of prison. They probably never seen a garden or had a garden in their lives. And so we offered them an apprenticeship every year where they worked for money in people's gardens. And then we would help them into further employment beyond it. And we ended up having a sort of 80 to 90% success rate in them achieving employment, which is kind of unheard of really with the demographic we were working with. I did that for 7 years, but we had to raise around £20,000 a month on top of income. And although I love fundraising and was a bit of a challenge for me, enjoyed it. When I then took on Architectural Plants, I realized I could self-fund it through here. So we closed the charity, and I now have an apprenticeship scheme at Architectural Plants called AP Homegrown. And it's all about homegrown plants, homegrown talent. So what's fantastic is we self-fund it. We don't require any other funding from anyone else. Wow. And the apprentices get to work in marketing. We have a degree apprenticeship in marketing, Olivia, who's doing on her fourth year of a degree. And then we have other students who are doing horticulture, and they get to work across all the different sites we're on. They get to work in our gardens here, selling, you know, anything really. And so the vision of helping young people into horticulture has carried on really ever since. So, yeah.
I love all that sort of stuff. As you know, I'm quite passionate about it. Before we go to the break, though, I just have to ask you, the planting of the trees with a helicopter. Come on, tell me about it.
So I'm someone who doesn't like saying no to anyone. And a customer has a garden where they've extended out onto their boundary so much so you can't get down the sides with any trees. So they said, how do we do this? I want to build a forest of acers, an arboretum in my garden. And so we came up with the crazy idea to plant with a helicopter. And so we've done it twice, but the second day we used, we planted 5 or 6 trees in 45 minutes, and it was intense. And my team stood by me, and we worked out how to do it. And pretty extreme way of planting. And the tree literally gets planted by the helicopter. You have it all prepared. It has to be done incredibly quickly and efficiently. So yeah. I like challenges, basically. It's my thing.
Is there a video on YouTube for us to watch that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you can watch it through our YouTube channel, Architecture Plants, or on the website. But it's great fun. It was brilliant to do it. And the customer was obviously had a story to tell his grandkids and all his neighbours as the helicopters came in. But yeah, it's brilliant.
Okay. We'll continue our conversation with Guy in just a moment. But first, it's time to hand over to our sponsors. Stay with us. You won't want to miss what's coming up next.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
We're back. So before we go to Feng Shui, which is in our final segment, I'd love to talk to you, although I have already, about your extraordinary Indian Ocean journey. So what actually sparked this attempt?
I was into endurance sports in my 20s. I used to go off on mad runs and cycles, often my own, just to get away and to be out in the wild. And I came up with this kind of idea of doing something of a big challenge. So I was currently, at the time, I was studying actually to be an accountant, and it wasn't really the right path for me. So I found out about this race across the Indian Ocean, which is a 4,500-mile crossing from Western Australia to Mauritius. And it had never been successfully rowed across by a pair before. So I wrote my friend Andrew, a good friend of mine, who was a ex-GB junior rower. So he's a pretty solid rower. And I said, you need to teach me to row, because I didn't know how to row at the time.
You didn't even know how to row when you decided to do it?
No, I mean, I just don't put boundaries up for things. I'm going to do this and we are going to get across successfully. Who can I do it with? And I found Andrew and it was perfect. And we signed up in 2 years of preparation, lots of raising of money. At the time, it was 2007, 2009, terrible time to fundraise. We had to raise over £100,000. I ended up having sponsorship from LucasAid and Nivea, and amongst other, some fantastic businesses too. MSS, Merseyside Ship Stores, became our title sponsor. And it just, it was this wave, excuse the pun, but this wave of excitement around it. And again, with nothing, you know, we had to get a boat built, and I kind of realized from that moment that you could kind of do anything if you set your mind to it, if you have that long-term vision or pathway. And so, yeah, and so we set off in April 2009, and we had to row 4,500 miles. And the reason it hadn't been done is because, as you can imagine, incredibly dangerous set of conditions, big waves, very bad weather, lots of sharks and all that kind of thing.
Tell me about the sharks. Come on, tell me. Did you have any friendly ones? Did you have any unfriendly ones?
So, look, I think I've always, ever since I've watched the film Jaws, I'm afraid I've been terrified and still am of sharks. Spielberg's got a lot to answer for, but we saw the most amazing animals. Bronze whaler sharks came up to us, whales. There was points in the middle of the ocean where it was like being on a safari, and you realised you were not in your zone, and you were just there watching wildlife. It was incredible. The stars, the meteor showers, flying fish hitting you in the face. Huge 8-meter swells as big as buildings coming towards you, waves essentially. So yeah, it was an incredible, incredible experience. And this is now 2009, so it's a while ago now, but I still have these vivid sort of memories of the adventure we went on, really. Yeah.
I can't imagine what the energy must have been around you. It must have been just amazing. I mean, I wouldn't want to, being brought up on Jaws, I wouldn't have wanted to do it, but I'm just saying, that sort of thing. Is there anything in scope coming up in the future that you might do something like that again?
So I think that we talked about earlier with the helicopter lifting of trees, you know, they're related because I like challenging myself. So when people ask me that, I mean, running the company I have now, it's not easy. There's 40 staff, and I don't let it stop. You know, the challenge is always there. So it's not, I don't now need to go and do something that's sort of organized, organized chaos. I kind of create it. I create every day is about achieving something I want to love every day. That's my goal. And I force my team to do that. So I think my biggest motivator actually is pushing people out of their comfort zone and making them go through what I had to do on the row. And I get a lot of pleasure out of, because it's made our team here the strongest it's ever been. And I think that's why I really get a kick out of, if I'm honest.
Yeah, it's funny. I have a inner circle in Feng Shui and Chinese astrology. And it doesn't change every year. Some people come back every year. And one of the things that I always say, you know, you have to love every day what you do. You know, I mean, I've been a DJ, I've owned restaurants, I've done all these things. I like you. I have to be challenged, even by a twiglet of a cat that's a nightmare. But I literally could not have my life unless I don't want to think that I work. I want to think that I'm doing what I love. And I don't know how, you said it really well, but I don't know how to get this over to people. They will go and do their jobs and hate them, but this is your life now. You're living your life now, so you should be doing what you're doing. Not every day is perfect, as we know, when things go to plan, but I think it's really important to do what you love.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah, it's a way of trying to get others to feel and learn and do that themselves. That's a really important thing, so passing that on.
Yeah, with children. So we're just going to go over to our sponsors for a short while, and then we're going to come back, and I am going to test Guy on his plants. So we'll see you on the other side.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, You're not alone. Here your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Right, we're back now. So, in Feng Shui, because I've got you on here because you're a gardener, we have different areas of the house and the garden, and they have different areas and they mean different things, right? So we have, so if we were taking a square garden, right, and different parts of that garden are different areas, right? So the north in Feng Shui is all about your career and your life path. So the plant colour there in the north, if you can think of anything that will grow, is greens, blues and browns. Can you think of anyone, anything that might go there?
Yeah, so in a garden, the north for us is obviously shady. So we're thinking about one plant that definitely jumps to mind is a tree fern. So tree ferns are from New Zealand, and they're quite tender, but they've got this amazing trunk and then this firework display of green that's evergreen, yeah, and underplanted with lovely sort of ferns as well. That's what I would be thinking for that space.
This is going to be an awesome garden by the time you and I finish. We'll have to go and build it somewhere.
Yeah.
So in the northeast of in your garden is all about wealth, wisdom, knowledge. So the colours in that area are greens, browns and reds. Can you think of a plant beginning with red?
Yeah, so I'm thinking about it's quite a traditional plant actually, but it's holly. So we use holly quite a lot for like big really nice structure. You can clip it, but they have obviously that incredible red berry too, which is really quite powerful in the winter, so it's a useful plant. And as I said, it's quite what we would call quite a traditional plant. So yeah.
So randomly in my northeast, I've got two gardens in the northeast. I have like a willow tree, which I fell in love with when I moved here. Mm. Now it's like part of the street. Everyone's like, wow, look at that, And then when they say, oh, when it comes to autumn, oh my God, all those leaves all over the green ground. So they love it and then they hate it. But willows. Yeah. So east of your garden, the east governs health and family and growth. So that colour's really good there are greens, browns and blues or purples. Anything?
Yeah, so we there's a lovely plant called Liriope muscari, which is, I call it the, when I talk to customers about it, we talk about it being like the evergreen bluebell, and it has purple and blue colours, so evergreen again. So in the east, we're talking about sort of morning sunlight and then shade in the afternoon, and it would do really well in that environment. So yeah, Liriope muscari, I'm going to go for.
It sounds a bit like Harry Potter.
Latin.
Yeah. Let me just ask you, when you say, because I'm not very good at this, evergreen and what is the other word?
Yeah, sorry. So evergreen is ultimately a plant that is always has foliage on, and it's evergreen, or deciduous is where you tend to get that amazing autumn colour, like in America they call it fall. and it's where the leaves drop. So you get 4 months without leaf, 8 months with foliage in a general sense.
Yeah, I went to Salem just to see that. Everyone's like, oh, which one are you going to Boston? I was like, oh, June, I just need to go along to Salem. Anyway,
yeah, beautiful.
Southeast, right? This is all about wealth and opportunity. So this plant has to be like, do you have things like prosperity plants? You know, they say, you know, like the money plant. Is there any in your world that do prosperity that you can think of?
Funny. I think it depends what you see as wealth. I mean, so if you were to look at it slightly differently around plants that could give you something like fruit. We have a plant called Poncirus, which is spiky, but it has the most beautiful flower and fruit on it. So I think that's kind of wealth in the sense of what it delivers for you. We often have to think about gardens in a way that's not just how it looks; it's also it gives you something back. So I think that would be a nice kind of plant for that space.
Another Harry Potter name, right? South. The South governs, and this is really important as in 2026, it's about recognition and visibility, fame. So which sun-loving plants are really millions, isn't there?
No, there are, but actually, instantly jumped to mind, actually, was the olive tree. Now, olives love the sun, as you know, Mediterranean plant, but what's so special about olives are that if someone comes in and wants an olive tree, it's very, very, very hard for me to give them an alternative. They're so unique.
Right.
And we have some olives at the nursery that are over 500 years old at the moment. You know, so they come with that incredible kind of legacy as well. They've been on a journey, you know, so I think olives.
What I'm loving about this is that they can come to you and buy it, can't they?
Yeah. Absolutely. So sometimes people come and just buy an odd plant, or we design their garden and everything from, you know, very small plants we've homegrown here to 500-year-old olive trees that you can't, you know, very few of them. So
it's funny, I went to one of our friends, Dee Blick, and went to her garden. I went round there, we were going up somewhere, and she showed me her garden. I was like, oh my God, that is amazing. And then obviously you were introduced to me from that. Your work is amazing. It's not just about a garden, it's about sculpturing as well, isn't it?
Yeah, so we're what I'd call like a sort of lifestyle gardening and interior business. So we shape gardens as well. And we build them based on the sort of personalities of the customers we work with. So it's quite important that we get to know people, and they're there. For as long as you live in that house, they're there. So we really take that into consideration, and we can change it through the way we clip it or maintain it.
Yeah. Anyway, back to this. The Southwest, this will be a good one for you, supports love and relationship, which will be soft, nurturing, paired plants that go together. Is there such a thing?
Yeah, it's really good. So following on from that kind of Mediterranean theme, you can use lovely scented flowers, lavenders and rosemaries that get you into kind of that calming feeling as well. And often we put those near to where people are sitting because you want to sit in the sunniest part of the garden. So I think they get those aromas and they're very tactile. I think they would work really well in that space.
It's interesting because I have lavenders and rosemary by my front door, but that's mainly because of the movie Practical Magic, because it's one of my favourite movies. And so I always have that as a romantic side of me. So nothing to do with feng shui at all. West. So this is associated with creativity and children. It's quite an interesting thing because it's more about plants that flourish. And I know we're talking West, so that's late day sun, isn't it? Or something.
We really like to kind of to train and to nurture plants, and one of the things we can do, which is called nuwaki, which is a technique, it's a Japanese topiary form, a bit like, imagine a bonsai but a bigger version, and we can grow various trees to go in that space. So I don't know, we might put something there like a myrtle, which has got this amazing peeling bark but beautiful white blossoms that are set, you know, smell nice and look great. But there's also this kind of training element. So they require ongoing care and nurturing. I think they would look, they would work really well there.
Good. And the final one, which is the Northwest. And the Northwest in Feng Shui is all about helpful people, mentors. It's meant to be a very strong area. It's the male energy of the house or the garden.
Wow. Okay.
It's a very strong, strong person.
Yeah, that's so. I think when I think about a garden, I'm thinking about two things really. One is there's a plant called Eleagnus abingii. Eleagnus abingii is basically like a, it's like this rock solid, bomb-proof hedging plant on coastal gardens, and they would actually work really well in that space. But what's amazing about them as well is that they're quite versatile. So they could be a hedge, or you could clip them into a lovely multi-stem where you can look through them. So I call them, yeah, bomb-proof, robust, and a sort of solid contender for that space.
Well, I just wanted to say, considering I've just thrown him into this guy, you have done amazingly well. And maybe I should come to your 36 acres and we should build a feng shui garden so that people can see what it looks like. But we're coming to the end of our chat, so which is a bit of a shame because I've got loads more questions for you. But can you, how can people find you?
So we have a very active Instagram channel, Archiplants. Our website, if you are into horticulture, our website is architecturalplants.com. And obviously we have our own YouTube channel too. So really recommend, if you're into plants, get on one of those and see what we do. We're not just about plants. We also have events and weddings and courses and all sorts of stuff. So it's a fun day out or a fun read on the website.
Brilliant. I'm going to go and do that. So thank you for joining me today. I'm going to say your stories from horticulture, which I've actually said it well, innovation to bold, adventurous cross oceans are a reminder of how resilience, passion and vision can shape not just your garden, but your life. So thank you so much for coming on, and I will catch up with you soon.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Feng Shui Your Way. I can't wait to share more insights and inspirations with you in the next episode. Remember, life is all about creating harmony and welcoming positive energy into your world. Until next time, stay balanced and keep your energy flowing.